May it please the court. My name is Margaret Foley, attorney registration number 40960, and I'm here today representing appellants, the Helmricks. I ask the court that I be permitted to reserve approximately 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The Helmricks' requested position is very simple. We believe their historic use of the property at issue should be recognized, that the actual conditions on the ground, rather than a survey completed years later, should control which party is deemed to be the rightful owner of the property at issue, the disputed 2 acres, approximate 2 acres. The Helmricks argue that since they purchased their property on May 29th of 1983, just shy of 29 years before Oak Ridge Energy moved a quiet title on the disputed 2 acres, that they took various actions that established their ownership through adverse possession, or established their claim.
Are they claiming anything by way of their predecessor, or is it their own time there that they're calculating?
Your Honor, the arguments during the trial were specifically just related to their use and nothing related to their predecessor in issue, their predecessor in interest, other than the fact that Mr. Helmricks walked the property with the prior owner of the property in order to get a lay of the land and figure out where the boundaries were at that time.
Now, there were surveys in the record. There were surveys by a Billy Roundtree, by a Gary Newport, and then another one at trial who testified, Mr. Kreitz, I believe. Did your client rely, how did your client ascertain what the description should be when he took title? Was it because of this Roundtree or Newport survey, or how did it happen?
Certainly, and I believe that's a serious issue here. When Mr. Helmricks was just familiar with the property from living in the Durango area, and he went and figured out who the owner of the property was. So he contacted the prior owner. At that point, the owner wasn't in town. They met out at the property, I believe, on 3 occasions before the property was purchased, and they had the opportunity to walk the property. Now, the gentleman that the Helmricks purchased the property from was elderly, and this is, you know, somewhat, I wouldn't want to call it mountainous, but we are talking about a mesa on level ground, and there's trees at various corners, sloping terrain. So they did not make it to each of the corners of the property. But Mr. Helmricks and the prior owner were able to walk this specific portion that is at issue today.
And who was on the property that the your opponent claims at that time? They bought the property. Who was there before them?
Sure, before them was actually the same, the property was once all owned by the same entity, by the same individual. I believe in 1983, when the Helmricks purchased the property, that a bank was holding the remainder of the property in trust. It was either Blakemore Thomas was the individual that my clients purchased their acreage from. I am not clear if it was, I believe it was still the Oak Ridge Energy was still owned by one of W.D. Ewing's family members, who Mr. Thomas was also related to. So at one point in time, all of the acres were continuous.
Okay. Please.
And Your Honor, I guess one of your other questions was related to the surveys that my client relied upon. And one of those surveys was completed by Gary Newport in 1983, but that survey was not completed until after the Helmricks purchased the property.
Ms. Foley, okay, let's talk about the Roundtree survey, and then there were subsequent surveys. Did any of them mark the boundary in a different place from one another?
Sure, and so there's a discrepancy between the Roundtree corner and where that, the Roundtree corner and Mr. Newport's corner. But both of those corners, they actually aren't the corners that are relevant specifically to the disputed 2 acres. The difference between the Roundtree corner and the Newport corner is down in the, could be the
southeast
corner of the property. But the majority of the disputed acreage that we're talking about today is up in the northeast corner.
All right.
And so there was testimony at trial from, it was either Mr. Kreitz or Mr. Newby, that when Gove Engineering was completing their survey work, that there was no record of a monument ever having been recorded at the northeast corner. which is where this dispute largely originates from.
All right, so let me just ask you more of a blanket question then. So of the various surveys and the description in the deed, was there any discrepancy from all those documents as to where the boundary line was?
Oh, and the deed itself, certainly. So one of the issues here is that when Mr. Helmrichs went out and walked the property and had the Newport survey completed in 1983, that it was his understanding that the property was then further east than what the trial court determined the deed actually defined the property boundary to be.
All right, and did anyone subsequent to the deeds who surveyed the property mark the line differently from what the deed description was, or did they say it was the same as the deed description?
Sure, and I think part of the problem here is, Your Honor, is that there was a historic fence line that Mr. Helmrichs testified regarding, that it was his opinion when he walked the property originally that up in that northeast corner, there was remnants of two fence lines that met at that northeast corner. Now, there wasn't, recorded monuments, and there wasn't, per se, a steady fence along that entire line, but there was, according to Mr. Helmrichs and his testimony, that it there was a historic fence, portions of which were remained, not only when he purchased the property, but also at the time of trial.
Okay.
And so one of what I think is important here is that one of our arguments related to the importance of that historic fence line. You know, part of what I think is confusing here is that we have this northeast corner of the property, which is up where that axle was, and we have that different testimony about when the axle was put in place. But that property is then separated by several hundred feet from a separate area of the Helmrichs property that is also disputed. And that's the area where the Helmrichs installed an electric fence to keep in their horses. So that portion of the disputed property is separated. And when we look at that electric fence, Mr. Helmrichs testified that he put up that electric fence along the historic fence line. And so that electric fence was installed to not only keep the horses in a pasture, but also to act as a portion of the eastern property boundary.
So, sorry to interrupt. That was installed when, the electric fence?
1985 or 1986.
And it was taken down around 2002?
Correct, Your Honor.
So we're at how many years at that point?
I believe the trial court determined that under the best case scenario for the Helmrichs, it would have been 17 years.
So what happened after the electric fence was taken down?
Sure, Your Honor, and I believe that's one of the important points here, is that when after the Helmrichs horses died, they did take down the wire portion of that electric fence because it was no longer required to keep the horses in the pasture and prevent them from getting into other areas of the property. But what the Helmrichs did not do is they did not stop maintaining that portion of their property. They did, some of the fence posts were removed, but at the time of trial, Mr. Helmrichs testified that at least 10 of those fence posts remained. He hadn't gone out there and counted them, but it was his position that there were at least 10 fence posts remaining. Now, it's true that that fence did not stand for the entire 18-year statutory period. But it's our argument, it's our position, that simply because the fence did not stand for 18 years does not automatically defeat the Helmrichs' claim to have adversely possessed that portion of the property.
So what evidence was there that he continued to use that portion of the property after the fence was taken down?
Sure, and what the Helmrichs continued to do was, a piece of property where you're maintaining, a typical lawn. It's more of a rugged mesa-like piece of property. So you have grasses, you have other things that grow. They didn't plant a lawn of sorts, but what they did do is continue to clear the brush out of that portion of the property.
That was after 2002.
Correct, Your Honor.
Keep going, I'm sorry.
That's okay. And so they did those things, and it's our position that in doing so, the Helmrichs acted as an ordinary property owner under the circumstances, and that in order to, in cases in Colorado where a fence line isn't necessarily maintained, a property owner still can assert adverse possession through evidence of use and occupancy on the ground. And by maintaining and keeping the brush clear from that area, it's my position that the Helmerichs continue to act as a reasonable homeowner, landowner, under those circumstances.
Okay, Ms. Foley, let me ask a two-part question based on that then. So did the court consider that evidence? And if not, can we consider it now?
Certainly, Your Honor. It's my position that based on the nature of the court's findings of fact and conclusions of law, that evidence was not considered. That the court related to that specific piece of property down by the electric fence, the court simply looked at the fact that the electric fence did not stand for a full 18 years and allowed that to defeat the Helmerichs' claim for adverse possession related to that portion of the property. The standard of review, while I recognize in adverse possession cases, the court generally defers to the trial court's determinations of fact. But in cases where there's clear and convincing evidence that the standard of review, the trial court's findings of fact and conclusions of law did not address each and every element of adverse possession, that for that reason, we can then go back. The case should be remanded to the trial court for that determination.
Was there other evidence following up on Judge Lichtenstein's question, if you're done? Or do you have another part to it? What other evidence? When they continued to maintain the brush, but the fence was actually gone, did anyone else maintain that part of the property? Was there any testimony before the judge that your opponents came in and did something in that area?
With respect to that portion of the piece of property, Your Honor, no. It's our position, and I don't believe the testimony, there was any evidence offered to the contrary at trial, that anyone, that Oak Ridge or any other party for that matter, came in and tried to exercise exclusive control of that area.
When did they come in to that area? What year?
It's my position, Your Honor, that didn't happen, and really we didn't have notice of that until 2012 when the quiet title action was filed.
When did they buy it?
They bought the property in 1990.
Okay, so it was just vacant, or you didn't see any part of them, or what?
Well, there were various surveys that Gove Engineering completed on the property. That those surveys, I believe, started in 1993, were finished in 1994, and other surveys were later conducted. Specifically, there was one in 2008 related to subdividing the Oak Ridge property. But it's our position that related to that specific piece of the disputed property down by the electric fence, that the Helmerichs are the only parties to ever have exercised exclusive control over that portion of the property.
But there was no testimony to the contrary?
Not in my position, Your Honor, not that I'm aware of.
Were you the lawyer at trial?
I was not. Our firm did not try the case.
Okay. So your contention is the trial court erred as a matter of law in not considering your client's actions after the fence, the electric part of the fence, was taken down?
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. I just want to ask one quick question.
Absolutely.
Just to help me out. The picnic area, is that something else entirely, a different area?
The picnic area is also towards that southern portion of the disputed acreage.
But that's not the horse corral.
It's not the horse corral. And I think I have to agree with opposing counsel's arguments that there wasn't sufficient evidence offered at trial to allow the Helmerichs to establish a claim for adverse possession in that area. And I believe that actually improves our point that the trial court in the findings of fact and conclusions of law did determine that there was clear and convincing evidence demonstrating that the Helmerichs did not establish a claim for adverse possession related to that picnic area, but the trial court did not engage in that same analysis related to the area where the electric fence was. Thank you.
You have a minute and three left.
May it please the court, counsel. Michael Goldman on behalf of Oak Ridge Energy, Inc., 17443. The plaintiff and the prevailing party in the trial court is Oak Ridge Energy, Inc. It's a family-run corporation, and its president is Ms. Shishi Ray. She's present in the courtroom with me today. She was also present throughout the trial, and I was lead trial counsel on behalf of Oak Ridge at the trial court. Prior to Ms. Ray's leadership with Oak Ridge Energy, her mother, Sandra Potsky, led the company until she died of cancer in 2010. And prior to that, Ms. Potsky's father, Ms. Ray's grandfather, Noel Potsky, led the company. All three of the principals of the corporation dealt with the appellants at various times throughout this period as far as different areas of encroachment on property and the reasons for a survey and many surveys that came after that. Oak Ridge brought this action to quiet title in 2012. It does involve a boundary dispute in Southwest Colorado, whereby the facts were hotly contested at trial. This appeal is the Hillenbrook's effort, we contend, at another attempt to convince this court as to their version of the facts. As is clear, we're beyond the presentation of the weighing of evidence. This the trial court did in 2012. The appellants essentially raised three issues. They raised the issue of changed boundaries as a result of surveys. They raised the issue of color of title, that they obtained color of title and they held the property while they had color of title for 7 years while they also paid taxes, and that was another reason that they have disputed property. And then last, they argue that they acquired the disputed property, and we're talking about almost a couple of acres here amongst the vast tracts of land, but that they acquired the property through adverse possession, that they held this disputed property, satisfying all the requisite elements of adverse possession for the 18-year period. Upon the appellant's contention first that they were being slighted somehow by some sort of changed boundaries, that some surveyor came in and changed the boundaries, the court considered this. And the court considered all the evidence, the statements, and credibility of the witnesses. And the trial court agreed with Oak Ridge that the deeded boundaries between the two properties never changed, either by government resurvey or any other survey. That the common boundary was defined between the Oak Ridge property and the Hillenbrook's property by a straight line north to south from the center west 116th monument boundary at the top end of the property down to the west 116th boundary at the bottom of the property. You could draw a straight line, and that is what the surveyors did, Daryl Kreitz and Mr. Newby, from the north end down to the south end, and you could easily define what the boundaries were. This is what the Hillenbrooks received in their deed in 1983. The Oak Ridge Energy Corporation received a deed to the adjoining property, same boundary, center west 116th boundary at the top, the west 116th at the bottom. The deeded boundaries have always been easy to determine by an application of simple mathematics. Therefore, the appellant's assertion that Marr versus Schrader, this 1960 case, whereby Ms. Marr, whose husband had patented some land in the early 20th century around the Cortez area, that is a case that's not applicable here. That is a case where the government came in 1916 and resurveyed what Ms. Marr had received through patent. And there was a specific, and there is a specific law in the United States Code that prevents one who receives land through patent from having that taken away by a resurvey by the government. That's not what took place here. There was no government resurvey. There's no resurvey of anything. All that has taken place is a survey to determine where certain monuments are, and then drawing the line straight down from those particular monuments to determine the boundaries. the trial court properly reasons that if there was a common boundary between Oak Ridge and the appellant's parcel that could be determined, then the appellants claim that they own the strip of disputed property under color of title, either outright or via adverse possession, is easily negated. The 1894 case of DeForesta versus Gast is an excellent case that actually defines color of title for us, and basically says that when you hold something, and when you hold color of title, it's because your deed is imperfect. Your deed has some sort of problem. As such, the DeForesta case also holds that a perfect paper title without any sort of defect needs no extraneous support. So again, here, the Helmricks received a deed that granted them the west one half of the southwest one quarter of a section of section 33. Easily determined. We weren't talking about meets and bounds. We're not talking about measurements. We're not talking about directions. We're talking about a very specific section that can be easily defined. And the court determined that because we can easily define this particular property that the appellants received through their deed, there's no reason to look for any extraneous support. There can be no color of title. So that argument gets disposed of, the color of title argument. And therefore, the claim that, well, we had color of title to certain property, the disputed property, we held it for more than 7 years, we paid taxes on it for more than 7 years, is of no effect. The trial court found that the Helmricks had perfect paper title, as evidenced in Exhibit 51, that's the deed, which granted them that west one half of the southwest one quarter of section 33. As a result of this initial finding, the Helmricks' claim of occupying that disputed parcel beyond their deeded parcel has no validity. Concerning the appellant's claims to my client's land by adverse possession, the appellants argue that the court misapplied the law of adverse possession, when in fact all the appellants are seeking to do, we submit today, is that they're trying to re-argue their factual position. And under the case of Anderson versus Cold Spring Tungsten, a 1969 case that we cited, as well as Sigelke versus Atkins, 1960, both those cases basically stand for the proposition that where there is competent and adequate evidence in the record, and the trial court's findings are amply supported by those, by that competent and adequate evidence, this court should not intervene and set aside those findings.
Okay. I was just going to say on, let's talk about this adverse possession claim with regard to the area with the electric fence and then the wires were removed.
Yeah.
Did the court make any findings with what happened after the wires were removed and who had access or who was using that particular disputed property?
Your Honor, there was very little evidence. Aside from the fence, there was very little evidence of use in that area. And we submit to you that the use of the fence was really discussed basically as a means of corralling horses and not necessarily as a boundary fence. Mm-hmm. The use of the fence, Mrs. Helmricks testified, was used from 1985 to about 1999. Afterwards, her husband took the stand and he testified that the fence actually may have existed up to about 2002.
All right, well,
found 2002.
And he did.
Okay.
And we... Yes.
Oh, so then after 2002, I think that Ms. Helmricks testified that area had, with the brush was cleared in that area. And did anyone else testify as to who used that area and for what?
There was no further testimony about any further use of that area. Mr. Kreitz and Mr. Newby, both surveyors that were commissioned by Oak Ridge Energy, commented about their observations of the area when they walked the land, both in the 90s and up to 2011, 2012, that any evidence of fence, which they found, and so they did find a strand of fence.
But that was, wasn't that years after the your opponent's claim that they obtained title In other words, once they have the 18 years,
yes.
If they have the 18 years, that's the end of it.
It is. Title would vest.
So I think what my colleague was asking you,
yes,
was after the electric fence was taken down because the last horse died, what was the testimony before the judge, if anything?
There wasn't, other than the prospect of clearing the brush, but I don't think it was very specific. It wasn't really as to any sort of a year as to when that occurred. And again, as far as Mr. Kreit's testimony, Mr. Newby, they testified that any evidence of use out there appeared to be haphazard.
But that's much later. Let's talk about what happened with the judge at the hearing.
Yes.
Whether you believe it or not, the important thing, sure, is what the trial judge believed,
yeah,
and heard. Did your opponent's husband and wife testify that they cleared the brush from that area for at least another year, which would have taken them to the 18 years?
Your Honor, I don't recollect that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Did your own clients testify that they did anything on their end to show that they believed they owned that piece?
There was no testimony by my clients,
okay,
as to that particular very small, minute area, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, the court did credit the time, or correct me if I'm wrong, did the court credit the time they had the electric fence and their horses on that land?
I believe the court looked at that issue and suggested that the land had been used for the corralling of horses for 17 years.
Okay, and when the horses no longer lived there and there was no need for the electric fence, was there testimony from Mr. Helmrichs that they still maintained it? They had their posts or whatever was left?
Yeah, there was testimony that there were posts on the ground, there was wire on the ground, there was testimony that there was some applicators attached to trees, which apparently were attached in a very haphazard, zigzagging fashion, not suggesting any sort of boundary whatsoever. That is, they went from tree to tree. This is a treed area, and the trees, of course, weren't in a straight line. They weren't parallel or anything. They just went from tree to tree.
Now, your opponents have cited an old case called Palmer Ranch, which is has apparently still the law that the court does not have to consider an actual fence. A person does not have to put up a fence, often does not in these rural areas, but they can show it through other means. Did the judge comment on whether your opponents had shown other means of taking that property for at least another year to take it from the 17 years to the 18?
Now, the judge found that the use to which they testified they had put the land for purposes of corralling horses had only lasted 17 years.
But that, I'm sorry to interrupt,
yes,
but that's based on when the electric fence was taken down.
Yes. And
so that seems to be a legal significance in the judge's mind rather than a factual question, that that's when the,
yes,
exclusive use, I mean, would
ended.
You agree?
I would agree.
So it seems to be a problem under the Palmer case. Would you agree? In other words, if the fence is taken down and they're still using the property exclusively for another year, that's a question of fact, certainly, not a legal significance that the fence came down in 2002.
Yeah, it's a question of fact that obviously the court did give much weight to, given the totality of all the evidence in this case, which also included a significant amount of evidence and testimony on the northern portion of property where Mr. Helmrichs argued that he had an axle some point farther east, about 26 feet east onto the Oak Ridge property, when in fact there was an axle that was right on his boundary line that many surveyors had commented and did survey monument records about this axle existing up to at least 1994. And there's been evidence that it was existing there in 1996. and there was a tremendous amount of dispute whereby Mr. Helmicks argued that there was no axle existing on my eastern boundary. The axle that existed was on the Oak Ridge property all the time. And then I cross-examined Mr. Helmicks and used Exhibit 44, which is a letter that Mr. Helmicks wrote to Oak Ridge Energy in 1994, stating that I'd like to work with you on another boundary adjustment utilizing the axle that is on my eastern boundary, approximately 60 feet just to the south of the center west 116th corner. So he admits.
I think his time is
up. Mr. Goldman, I see that your time is up.
Yes, thank you very much, Your Honors, and would appreciate and request that this court affirm the trial court's order. All right. Thank you.
Can you add 36 seconds to the time? We ran over 36. I'll give you an additional 36 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to follow up again on the recent line of questioning related to the location of the electric fence, I would just like to quickly read from the court's order, which states, even when viewed in the light most favorable to the defendants, the amount of time that this fence was in place is 17 years. Thus, the placement of the electric fence does not meet the elements of possession as required by Colorado Revised Statutes 3841-101. Now, while we recognize that, again, that adverse possession cases are inherently fact-specific, in cases under the case that Mr. Goldman cited, Anderson v. Cold Spring, while adverse possession is a question of fact and findings of trial court will not be set aside if they are supported by competent and adequate evidence, opinions of trial judges will be rejected if they are not supported by any evidence in the record or when the law has not been applied correctly. And I will be the first one to admit that our arguments, portions of our arguments, are stronger than others. And in relationship to this electric fence, the trial judge did not engage in a full adverse possession discussion, determination. He simply looked at the placement of that electric fence, determined it had not been in place for the statutory 18-year period, and then determined that the Helmicks had not adversely possessed that portion of the disputed property. Under Palmer Ranch, the Helmicks are the only parties to have exercised exclusive possession of that portion of the property. The Helmicks were only required to occupy the property for the statutory period in a manner consistent with exclusive possession of the property. There was no requirement that they maintain a fence.
Counsel, I see your time is up.
It is. I thank the court and ask that the decision be reversed and remanded to the trial court.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will be submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course.